right, welcome to the second live book review. So we've got two of my smartest friends, Kyle and Brianna, here with us to hit this again. And we were just talking ahead of time about how we're excited for this book just as much. And quite frankly, I think I'm more excited for this book than I even was for the last one. And so we're getting ready to jump into this. So if you're watching it, joining us, feel free to type a comment, questions, raise your hand. I know if you're on Riverside, there's a way to click to say you want to talk, and we'll be happy to bring you on and join us. If you're watching from LinkedIn or YouTube or anywhere else, I don't think you can join, but to talk live, but we'll try to monitor those for your comments and questions as well. So Kyle, Brianna, welcome back.
Thanks.
I'm excited
to get into this one.
Yeah. So the before we jump into this, the last book club we had was on Buy Back Your Time. And that changed my life. We've talked about that before on prior episodes. I think this one has the potential to change my life even more. I think the impact on this one may be even bigger. So I'm curious to dive in it with you guys.
Yeah, that's awesome. What do you think that, Aaron? Like, what's a quick takeaway? We don't have to unpack it fully now, but because I know Buy Back Your Time was pretty big for you in a lot of like practical aspects. Was there anything in particular?
I think Buy Back Your Time was very tactical for me, and practical, and which I needed, and it very, very helpful. This one made me face myself a little bit more. As of this recording, I don't think it's live yet, but Gian, who is the right-hand man of John Acuff, who had written a couple other books, but I was talking with Gian, and he said one of the challenges we have is we don't spend enough time with ourselves. He had just finished a 50-mile run where you can't have headphones, so he spent a lot of time with himself, and we unpacked that. And reading this book, I think for me, was a lot of self introspection. I'm very driven. I want to get to the next thing. So I didn't look at living in the gap, as we'll talk about in a minute, as a bad thing, because I was always excited to keep getting to the next place. But I didn't celebrate the gains I had made. And so I think from a mindset perspective, it's going to have a much farther reaching impact for me.
What my biggest takeaway, and we'll get to this, was like kind of framing it in like a visual sense of like where you actually mentally were living, or like reflect, because really we're all mirrors of each other. So my biggest one is my relationship with my husband, and it's like, why is he like constantly in this? And now being able to kind of put a framework around it where I can not only protect myself and like my cup, but also kind of respect his space and where he is. So that was something that really, really helped me frame it with my staff internally, myself, my kids, my friends, my business partners, all of it. And being able to kind of put a framework around it.
That's cool. Do you use this language?
That's good.
Brie, with your family, with your staff, with your, like, do you tell them like, hey, you're in the gap, hey, you're in the game, right?
Yeah, my 7-year-old, he's heard me say it now so much where he's like, man, daddy's in the gap today. And like, it makes him so mad because he won't read the book. And I'm like, it's fun over here. Like, come over to the game. And it's not meaning that like I think that's one too, is like, you're not constantly in the game.
Right.
You can't be. But just honoring that where you kind of are and how you can really shift it with a breath to go to that other part. And my COO at Dr. Contact Lens, I was kind of in the weeds a little bit of it. And I was really in the gap. And maybe we should kind of define what that means. Yeah. But he goes, Brianna, there was this book recommended to me. It's called The Gap and the Gain. I'm hearing a whole lot of gap from you. And I was like, are you gap and gaining me? Like, oh my God. It gives you that banter. It gives you that laughter that you need in the seriousness of lifing.
Wow. Yeah, that's it's tough when you suggest something and then it comes back at you, right? It's like you built and you set up your own mousetrap that you stepped into.
I did.
Yeah. Nice. So let's define them. You brought up, we're using terms gap and the gain. So Kyle, in a quick summary, what are the two?
Yeah. So I would say the gap is when you are, so there's the gap and the gain, and it's essentially like a mindset that we're talking about here. So you tend to have a mindset that's what Dan Sullivan and Ben Hardy would call as in the gap, when you're always comparing or measuring yourself against an ideal, some sort of ideal vision of yourself, whether that is your where your practice needs to be, where you need to be personally. It can be big picture things. It can be, you know, very specific things like, hey, I'm comparing myself against this maybe ideal, I run a lot, so marathon pace, but I'm always beating myself up because I can't get there, right? That's in the gap. Or if you are comparing yourself to the practice down the road that is twice the size of yours, and you think that they're so much more successful and you're always comparing yourself to them, that is, you know, that can be motivating and provide you direction, which that's, you know, a good thing. But when we constantly compare and measure ourselves based upon that, you know, it's going to lead to a lot of unhappiness and frustration. So that's kind of thinking in the gap, right? Whereas the gain is really just thinking back, and it's kind of a form of, I would say, kind of gratitude, another way of looking at gratitude and measuring yourself based upon what you have already attained or what you've already achieved. And it seems really simple, but I think that's kind of the reason why the book is so impactful and profound, is because it is really difficult. It's a simple thing, but like Brianna was saying, is it's really, really easy to always be thinking, measuring yourself based upon ideals, and then you're left frustrated and comparing yourself versus just measuring yourself based upon yourself, based upon your prior performance, building confidence that way, and kind of leaving the periphery out of it. So I don't know, you guys can add to that, but that's kind of my big takeaway or summary.
Brianna?
Yeah, I think one of the profound things is the very beginning of the book, where he talks about really how America was built, where Thomas Jefferson said in our Declaration of Independence is the pursuit of happiness. Pursuit being a really, really wrong word. So happiness is, with that pursuit, means that it can never be reached. So it's, I'll be happy when, I'll be happy if, I'll be happy. We do that a lot, which means if you get it, did you reflect and actually did that really make you happy? So just how our mindset has been ingrained in us from literally like when we learn about the Pledge of Allegiance or the Declaration of Independence, first, second, third grade, it's already like a shift. And I like how he also brings it into school, having a young kid now in school, 7-year-old, you see this crush of our schooling system. So he even talks about that in 1918, we forego child labor, sent them to school for them to sit down, shut up, raise their hand when talked to, for them to be better workers, literally to crush creativity, for them to go be factory workers. And we haven't re-examine this. So it's like this ideal of like, you need 25
like math
facts in a minute. Yeah. Like you need 25 math facts in a minute. Like, okay. Yeah, that's great. But that's their ideal. Maybe that's not his ideal. So he brings so many nuggets like that into the book of just how our minds are framed from such an early, early on. So I think raising young kids, it's really being careful with the words that you choose.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I found that a lot too. I thought it was really interesting when he started at the foundation of the Declaration of Independence and the quote, the pursuit of happiness. I always thought that was a positive, right? We have the ability to pursue happiness. We have the chance to, where other places in the world, you know, your mobility is limited. But I never looked at it as holding us back. That mindset just being a negative mindset, and so the perspective was interesting. It reminded me of a quote that I'd heard for a long time, that, you know, life's a journey, enjoy the ride. I think I've driven along and always just been looking out the front windshield, right? Where am I going? And I forgot to look back at all the cool things we did along the way. I enjoyed them at the time, but check, move on to the next thing. And one of the activities in this that he talks about, Dan and Ben talk about in the book, was to just write the three things at the end of the day that happened that day, right? Your three wins, whatever they were. And since starting it, I've been doing it, which is very similar to the best moments list for mm-hmm. John Acuff, right? Very similar styles, but it's been kind of neat to see all the cool things that happened in a day and all the how much I was able to accomplish and what I was able to accomplish, as opposed to thinking about, oh, I still got to do X, Y, Z tomorrow, right? Here's what I did do today.
What were your wins yesterday, Aaron?
My wins yesterday, so my daughter is in school. She's not watching this, but my daughter turns 18 on Friday. And so she gets her license on Friday, and we tell all our kids that, you know, you come up with a certain amount of money and then, you know, we'll pay the rest for your car. So we got a car from within the family, needed new tires and new brakes. And I remember taking it to the shop yesterday to get the tires, and it dawning on me that I've reached a point in life where I'm not stressing about how much the new tires and the new brakes are going to cost. And we didn't go for top of the line anything, right? But I wasn't stressed, right? There's money in the bank. I can pay for it. I'm not even thinking twice about, you know, can I do this all right now? Can I not? Do I have to spread it out? And I remember, it's probably been a long time, but I remember it feels like not too long ago where, you know, we were budgeting much more tightly because we had to. And so just that fun little win that I can make sure that the car she gets is 2007. It's nothing fancy, but it's new for her. Right. And it's up and running, and it's good and it's safe, and she's not going to have to worry about any maintenance issues. So that was one of mine. Another one, I met my wife down to go for our 5-mile walk while my youngest daughter was at soccer practice. And my wife's not a hand holder, you know, hands get sweaty. She just doesn't like any of that. And so as we were walking, she reached out and grabbed my hand. I'm like, that's really cool. Right? It didn't last very long, but it was really cool for the time I did, because I'm a physical contact person. So it was just, you know, and then thinking, hey, this is really cool that, again, we have the ability to take we have the opportunities to take this break to just go for a 5-mile walk and talk about all sorts of different stuff while our kids are, you know, doing the stuff they get to love. So some were big, some were small, but it was things that I wouldn't have paused to take stock in previously.
Aaron, that's good. I was just going to say, that's your first one with the tires. Like, I was just thinking about teasing that out for the listeners, because if you would be in the gap, right, in that moment, it would be like, I want to be able to, the ideal way about this is to get the top of the line tires, but I can't afford that. Or the ideal way would be to have, be comparing to trying to live up to some sort of expectation that's external to you, whether mm-hmm. that's something that your daughter saw or you saw on social media that was forcing you to do that. And then because you couldn't do that, you'd be frustrated, right? Yep. And unhappy. But the gain moment there is to look back and say, hey, look where, how far we've gotten. I mean, we're to this point now. You know, that's what's pretty cool about that. I mean, it basically puts you in such a present, grateful moment. So super helpful.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And it wasn't about the money I was spending. You know, I wasn't losing money. I was gaining something cool back for her.
Yeah.
Right. And so it felt good that I'm able to do this, and she doesn't even know yet. So sometime this weekend, she'll get the keys, you know, with a little ribbon on them. But so if you're listening and you know her, please don't tell her. But yeah.
So Kyle, what were you going to say, Brianna? Well, I was going to ask
you,
also tells you, like, when you go to sleep at night, right, you do your three wins mm-hmm. and then three things when you wake up in the morning the following day that you want to work on. And it's not to become this, like, ever-ending checklist, because I think that that's awfully a terrible way, and we kind of learned that from the Buy Back Your Time book. What were your two or three ones that you wanted to kind of work on today, or that you were looking forward to?
So today, actually, one of my cheat sheets is I got a short lined thing of sticky notes, so I can only write a couple on there. I used to have a really long sheet, but the ones I want to do today, Yeah, I used to have a whole long list of like, to-dos that never got done. Today we within VisionSource, we launched an update to a dashboard. So I just need to record the what that looks like so the members know. And then I've got some travel. So I have to finalize my travel on that. But dropping it down to just three things that I need to do is also helps not feel overwhelmed, right? And they're, I mean, not very sexy. They're mostly tactical. I got to do this. I got to do that. But I do like the end of the day wins because those I found are much more, you know, emotional and fun.
And personal is what I found too. And
very personal. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Kyle, what about you?
Yeah, for sure. Last night, it was super nice out here in Nebraska. And my two older boys, I have an 11-year-old and a 5-year-old. And we're getting to the point now where we can play catch, the three of us, like pretty routinely. And I grew up I have two sisters, only boy on the farm. I grew up, it would be like summertime. My dad is a farmer. He'd be out farming really late at night. And I would always wait for him outside the shed, basically the shed meaning like where all the tractors and everything goes. He would park his truck in there and then he would walk out and I would put his ball glove down, right where he would usually stand and just wait for him and just hope that he'd get home before dark. And when he did, we'd play catch. So like that's like a real fond memory of mine. So when I get to do that with my two boys, we're now to the point where they can actually catch it and throw it pretty routinely and no drop balls. So it's just like, it's super fun. So that's definitely, that was a top gain of mine last week or last night. So, but it's just fun to like, it's fun to sit there and think of the day and reflect on like, just, you know, like I said, gratitude and just be thankful about those things that, that you're measuring yourself, right? And this isn't somebody else's goal. This is just my personal goal that's associated with, you know, my past and a story that's been, you know, I've thought about a lot and couldn't wait to get to for my kids. So it's pretty awesome.
Okay, that's cool.
What about you? What are some gains you had?
Yeah, my gains yesterday was we got home and went to the pool. So my 2.5-year-old, like learning how to swim, obviously, and self-worth is a super important part, but he's like really becoming confident, which is really fun to see him. And then I got to go play pickleball, like got the boys in bed at a decent hour and then kind of got out on the court. And like, this is where too, Kyle, like living in the gap or the gain, I get there, had to wait like quite some time to actually get on the court because pickleball is like really, really taking off down here in South Florida. I'm like, where'd you guys all come from? And I can sit there and just, again, being quiet with myself and acknowledging that I got to go out there and play, not like festering over like the 20 minutes I had to wait to get on the court. So just taking those little moments to just that positive feedback loop that you need in the day to really take care of yourself.
Good.
Yep. 100%. Yeah, those are important. I got stuck in potential jury duty this week. So, which if you've been there, you right. So it's hurry up and wait and a lot of sitting and waiting. But I brought the book with me and usually I end up just scrolling on my phone and looking at stupid stuff that doesn't matter. But being able to go back and review this, you know, I almost was annoyed when they interrupted us to go do the actual jury duty part because I was more into reading the book. Right. So flipping the opportunities that you find yourself in and you can choose how they respond, which I want to pivot that into one of the things that I took away from it is in addition to looking back, right, it was really empowering because he talks about how you can take any situation and apply it to be a positive or it to be negative. Mm-hmm. There's a one chapter that talks a lot about trauma and how people look at that trauma and address that trauma. And, you know, what meaning you apply to it. And by no means is it minimizing what has happened, but what do you take from that? You know, and you could turn it into a horrible thing and you can be a victim, or you can flip it and turn it into a positive experience. So, you know, sometimes we certainly wish it hadn't have happened, but there's a positive outcome from that, which I thought was pretty neat.
Yeah, I would say like that's... I forget which chapter that was when he talked about that, but that was pretty pertinent. And I wouldn't classify, you know, my last couple of years as trauma or anything, but for me personally, one of the ways that this book helped me, and especially that type of, you know, mindset shift, especially in the last couple of weeks of reviewing, is so we I bought a second practice about a year and a half ago. And it's, we've had all the kind of the highs and lows of having a second location for sure. But for the last like 2-3 months, I would say a lot of my efforts have been, you know, not only just trying to build the one location, my original location, but also, you know, feeling kind of spread thin to building the other location, as well as doing the things with, iCode education, with our mastermind groups and our teachings, with that course and all that. So I kind of got to a place where I was like, I didn't feel like I was, able to, be all there for any one situation. And it kind of got me pretty down, I guess, for about 2-3 weeks ago. And then as I reviewed this, I thought, you know, I could reframe this. I could look at this a different way and just say, you know what, 5 years ago, I wasn't a practice owner at all. And now we have two practices. So, you know, awesome, great job. You know, maybe the practical locations, you know, I have way too high of expectations. They're both practices are doing great, but I would love them to be better. Like everybody wants their practice to be better, you know, and instead of focusing on the things I need to change and focusing on the ideal, you know, top line revenue, it's like, hey, we've grown year over year, every month, you know, compared to last year. It just caused me to like look back and realize, wow, look at the gains that we've made. Why am I so grumpy? You know, and it was super helpful. And I really do feel like it made a big difference in the last couple of weeks of just shifting the perspective. And like you said, Aaron, just changing the framing up the information in a different way and realizing, yes, the ideal is there for direction and motivation, but just stop measuring my performance and my value based upon that. So mm-hmm. Thought that was super helpful.
That. Yeah, that chapter is actually chapter 6, which I liked because I found it talks about transforming every experience into a gain and taking ownership of your past. One of the lines that I had underlined says that you can't have post-traumatic growth until you actively transform the experience that hurt you. And what he means by that was that, you know, the past is nothing more than the meaning we give it, right? So it's something bad happens or negative happens, but are you a victim of it or can you learn from it? And then he starts that whole chapter talking about how if you're in the gap mindset, you're in the passenger seat and this car is just driving you along wherever the driver takes you is where you got to go. But being in the gain mindset puts you in the driver's seat. Sometimes you got to drive through some crappy experiences, right? You got to drive through Phoenix in the middle of summer with the AC out. But what do you learn from? Oh, yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, I've been there too,
from that when I was a kid. Oh, it's horrible. But looking back, right, what did you learn from it? What did you value from it? I value AC, right? I value lots of other things, but, you know, what meanings do you ascribe to those? I think, and that was what I was talking about being very, very powerful. And Kyle, I don't think in your situation that it's bad to have an idealistic of where you want to go, as long as you're celebrating the improvements you've made along the way.
Right. But I think that's where you get, it's so easy to get caught up, just like he's talking about, in the gap, where it's almost like it perpetuates itself too. You know, the more you kind of get in those modes of unhappiness and comparison to some external thing, whether it's another colleague's practice, or just another, you know, even another friend in another, you know, business or anybody else that you're like, well, I should be like, I'm here right now at this age. I need to be further along and, you know, whatever it is, you know, it's easy to really get locked in there. And it's, there's really no good thing that comes from that in terms of just like your mentality or your mindset. You know, so one of the things that one of the main themes I would say of the book too is just, when you do keep yourself in the game, when you do remind yourself of the game, it kind of propels you forward to be even more productive and even more effective and also more unique, because there's no one, you know, nobody else is really going to be having the same gains that you are, because, you know, everybody's experiences are different. So as you continue to measure and grow based upon your own specific gains, that's going to propel you forward, because it's going to provide confidence and the needed motivation just to keep going. And that produces a pretty unique and valuable life, as I think it was said multiple times in the book.
Yep.
I like the part too, where he talks about moving from transactional versus transformational. So like our to-do list and all the things that we do on a daily basis or have to get done is really transactional. But then looking even with like my seven-year-old, for since he started going to school, I would always wake him up and I'd say, we get to go to school today. So when he now, not like I have to go to work or whatever, I get to go to work. But he's like, Mommy, do I get to go to school today? And I'm like, just that one word, how it hits mentally is really significant. And what he also talks in the book is just how we have, I mean, we've digitized our whole lives online, right? And it's just rainbow and butterflies all the time of everybody's ideal world. But you know what actually is happening behind the screen. And he says it's such a gradual, it's made to be gradual on that feeling and how that creeps into you mentally. But at the end of the day, it's your own movie and nobody else gives a shit about it. So I think too, where we are high achievers, I was just at a conference last week where he was talking about coaching. He was a coach in the NFL, and he's taken that over into business coaching, where it's always these kind of ebb and flows, and you have your sprints, right? But you also need your recovery. And you can't be, it's where can you kind of stay in that medium also with your team? So when we come in there, we have 25 patients on the books. This was just like my day this morning. Two patients back to back with neuro issues. My neuro lens was down. I'm getting something delivered today that hasn't been delivered yet. We have to implement that. And I had two staff members call out. Like, you get hit with that instantly and you're like, well, this sucks, right? But yeah. I could go in there and saying like, I, you know, helped uncover an issue that somebody was having for 5 months, you know? So like, those are exciting times where you're so into the next patient or so into like a staff member where they're not showing their potential. And one thing he said last week, he goes, do you know what, like, do people know around you what pisses you off? And what makes you want to give somebody a gold star? And when I like went back to my staff and I kind of asked those questions, like I know what pisses me off and I know what makes somebody want to give a gold star. And so I did it just with one staff member. We're going to implement it next week. But do you guys know what pisses you off and what makes you give a gold star?
Oh, yes. Kyle?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah.
What are they?
I would say when just like little inefficiencies, like if a prescription, essentially if like something on the pretesting is just something that's very routine and should be done and systematically done, and it's vital to my analysis of the information I don't get so mad if it's like out of the norm thing where they just didn't know. But if it's like a routine thing that should be done every time, that just like drives me nuts. I get very upset with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't stand just a lack of responsibility. If it's not my job is asking for a lecture.
He's nose flaring right now, Kyle. I can see it from here.
I can't. I'm feeling the frustration. It's not my job, or you know, it's and I don't like the word fair. Because you're comparing yourself and most of the time when that happens, you're making a comparison without all of the important information that helps understand. And the gold star is, you know, making a decision, even if it ended up being the wrong one. I'm very action oriented. And so if you did something and you made a decision to do something, I'm much more happy and excited that you, you know, took that initiative and took that responsibility, as opposed to freezing and, you know, well, I didn't know what to do, so I did nothing. And my team knows that. And so they've become very good about it, at least, you know, at making a decision and saying why they chose what they did. Cause I'll forgive, you know, the wrong decision way more before I forgive not doing anything.
I love that. Yeah. Mine that pisses me off is like potential. Like I know that it's in there and just like hold back. And I'm like, how do I get that?
Yeah.
Like we all are living to that, I think too. And then gold stars is just going above and beyond. Like you would want to be treated as a human, saying hi to somebody first, like just the little things. And I learned that from such a young age. But I think what he brings us back into the book is the emotions that the gap creates is it, he tells you it releases cortisol. So you go into this like fight and flight, like our nose flares, we get like huffy and puffy. Like you can feel like the sweat, even when we said like what pisses you off, like you can feel the raw emotion as science-based people. When you go into the game, it releases dopamine. And that dopamine hit is that gratitude. Like I get to rest and relax and like live in the moment, which more than ever, cortisol is just at its height. Mm-hmm. Even when you turn on your phone in the morning, like my first messages to people, I don't want it to be a problem. Like my stat, like I have one team member, she knows like it irks me too. She's like, my payroll was off or this was off. And she does it on purpose where it's like, that's going to be the first message I see in the day. And I've trained her. I'm like, what is that first message that you're going to send to somebody? Even something like that, so small, where it can just set you down this path. And if you have that self-correction where you can, again, just take a breath, go for a 2-minute walk or whatever, just to reset, it's more critical than ever. And I don't think we're arming ourselves with that throughout the day, or even our team members, giving them that armor.
No. It makes me think of, I'm going to bring it back to optometry and get nerdy for a minute, but like managed vision care. And I've had the pleasure of working with, closely with iMed on a few things. And I crack up because I'll get people that call me and super upset that we're not getting the reimbursement we feel we should be. And that, you know, bad things are happening to us. And then I'll get a call from somebody else begging to help me get them on the panel. And I have no special powers, so don't call me. I can't get you on.
Right? Don't call me.
But Vision Source has a relationship with iMed, but it's you know, trying to get excited to get on because now it has access. But it's the same entity being viewed from both sides. And Kyle, I know you and Chris do a lot of work here in the total patient care model, but you know, just understanding what it is, and so you understand the rules of the game, right? You're not iMed's not emotional. iMed's just the managed vision care entity, right? And they're either, you know, underpaying you or they're giving you access to lots of lives, depending on how you look at it. And so I think that being able to take control and put yourself in the driver's seat, you know, yeah, you're going to expect there's going to be a bump or two in the road. It's not going to be, you know, the smoothest ever, and you might have to stop for gas, and you know, the air conditioning might get a little bit, you know, not cool enough in Phoenix in the summer, but it's, you're driving the car and you get to control what's happening. You know, Brandon, no different from you than with a doctor contact lens, and you know, 1-800's taking it or Costco's taking all my business. You know, well, you can be a victim or you can say, hey, let's learn from this missed opportunity. What can I turn it around to do to try to build a better relationship, build better connections, and probably sell some more contact lenses in the meantime. You know, yeah. So I think it's the attitude, how we subscribe it, right? Just, how do you look at something and say, what can I learn from this? What can I improve from this? How do I get better from this?
I'm going to change my answer. I think I gave a lousy answer. It's definitely what you just said. that's a great question. I'm going to think more deeply on what pisses me off and what doesn't, but It's problem solving, what we just talked about, right? If somebody comes to me and if there's a problem and they just refuse to try to solve it on their own, that they don't believe they have the agency or they won't even attempt to try to solve it. But then the gold star is they saw or they attempted or tried to solve the problem, right? And so that's what, you know, that's what is super powerful. And the reason I wanted to make amends to that is because my question, all this with this book and what I just said a second ago, what do you think, and obviously this is leading and loaded, but what do you think best application to the rest of our colleagues in our profession of optometry? What is the, like, you know, if you were to do a lecture to, you know, 25,000 other optometrists about this book, I mean, what would be the main message that you would share with them? I just want to hear what you have to say.
I love that question, Kyle. My answer is going to also be loaded because you gave it to me. Mine is now sitting, and many of us do this, where I have the private practice. I see patients still, which I think is critical. That was my vision to do that and own something. But now being on the vendor side, right, is we aren't taking action fast enough. We're not letting ourselves micro fail. I just heard that term last week where it was an incubator. And he says, an incubator is like all these startup companies come together and they get funded and things like that. And he goes, we teach them how to micro fail, micro failing in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. Like when you get to $500,000, we say, like, which road do we go down? We're scared to spend $9 a day or $2.99 a month or invest in something because we're going to fail. Why? Like, your patients are wanting to do business with you, but you're so paralyzed. Mm-hmm. And but yet you go and complain all day on these groups that you want this and this and this and this. Make decisions faster is like really kind of my soapbox. Mm-hmm. On empowering yourself. Stop being the pawn in the whole system. Like my bigger vision for this, being married to an MD, thank God I worked where he does because I know what he can change and I know what he can't. But being proactive and understanding that you don't have to be the pawn in the system. You're put there because you put yourself there. Learn how to play the game. And it's fun over here when you do. So I think that leads to this book really well, is there's so many of us in the gap on what you just kind of hit on there, Aaron. And people want to help you. And when you're the smartest person in the room, which a lot of us are in our practices, which is a really, really dangerous place to be. Again, on this call, I love these because I'm not the smartest person in the room. Go into that, lean into that, because that's what's fun. That's my soapbox.
Yeah. I think I love that. And I love that to make decisions faster. That's my mantra, right? Just decide something and go. You never fail. You just tried something that didn't work out. But if I was going to give a lecture to our colleagues, I think optometry lives in the gap. I'm fifth generation and I can remember grandpa being proud of the fact that they were a dropless profession and they can do everything without a drop. And then, you know, feeling bad that they didn't have diagnostics. Dad was the first class to graduate with diagnostics. And then I remember watching him go through getting therapeutics and, you know, and then LASIK came and LASIK was going to put us under. And then, you know, big box stores were going to put us under and 1-800 contacts was going to put us under. And oh my God, these people came up with Warby Parker and that's going to be the end of everything we do. But if you look back, we've done nothing but just grow and expand all the cool things we can do. And in our lifetime alone, because I was the first class, I graduated in 08, I was the first class graduating class for California to be able to have glaucoma privileges out of the gate. And we were this close to then having surgical privileges until our governor, you know, vetoed the bill. But it was like, there's just so many cool things that are coming that there's zero reason to ever think that optometry is in the gap. Yet you get on an online forum and there's lots of fear and lots of woefulness and people saying that they wouldn't encourage their children or patients to follow in the footsteps, which makes me sad because I think there's so much to gain. and just looking back over where we have come and just since we've graduated, you know, I can't imagine where we're going to be in the next 5 to 10 years. So I which makes me excited about the profession. It makes me excited to be here, and it makes showing up on Monday fun. Right? Can you imagine I know we've talked about it, Kyle, you and I and Chris were chatting via text, but you know, showing up on Monday, not wanting to be there is horrible. And I think if we shift our mindset as a profession, you know, how much faster are we going to get to where we want to go?
And especially going into a dark room.
Especially going into a dark room. Yeah.
No windows, nothing.
But like, how
let
fast
us
are we
out
gonna...
we get a little weird. I don't
yes.
know. I think we're all vampires or bats or something in our best lives. Like, maybe that's like our trauma yeah. when you're done too.
Yeah. Well, we weren't allowed to fail in school, right? I mean, you, God help you if you call the CD ratio a 3.5 and your attending thought it was a 4, right? Like,
yeah.
Lord help us. But I think that if we just, I mean, just look at everywhere we've come and look at the success of private practices, the success, mm-hmm. there's very few are not having good success. Maybe not the success
sure
you want,
thing.
Right? But yeah, mm-hmm. we look at everything we don't have and suppose what we do. But the minute we flip that mindset, this is, I mean, we're living large. This is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I would answer the exact same way. You know, Brianna and I were talking a couple weeks ago. We brought up the book. She's read it as well. It's Simon Sinek's, what is it called? The Infinite Game, The Infinite Mindset. Yeah, The Infinite Game. And it's probably, you know, he wrote Start With Why, which is a good one. And I honestly like this one a little bit better, The Infinite Game a little bit better. But really his big idea is that a lot of us, basically there's two different ways of thinking about your mind or having two different mindsets, kind of the same type of thing, gap and gain here. But he talks about the infinite mindset and then he talks about the fixed mindset. And, or was it fixed? I forget. But basically the infinite mindset is one where you're always trying to keep, like your goal is not to win the game. Your goal is to try to stay in the game. And when I think about that differentiation there for us as optometrists, like that has to be our mantra. I mean, we need to stop thinking that it is a competition, that we need to like try to win the game versus other practitioners, whoever those people are, whatever it is, whether it's people, you know, inferior to us in credentials or superior to us in any way. Forget it, right? Let's just figure out how do we stay in the game for our patients. And it's really, since I've read that, it's really kind of propelled me forward to think about the things that I, like the decisions that I make for my practice of, okay, so how do I stay in control of this? You know, okay, now AI, that's a, you know, that can be scary. That's like the autorefractor. That's like what you just said, the list of things that you just said that's, you know, scare the heck out of all of us. Well, how do we stay in the game? Right? How are we going to use AI to stay in the game, to help continue to grow our practices, to help our patients? And I really think like we definitely will. We can, but we have to have a better mindset about it. We can't, we got to utilize this technology because it's a technology that is only going to, I think it's going to be super helpful. You know, it's going to help us probably be more efficient. It's going to be help us be more effective in our patient care and in our treatment plans and, you know, diagnosing certain things on OCT. Like I've been trialing a new AI platform for OCT interpretation, you know, and that's, those things are going to be super helpful for us in the long run. So I think that's what I would say, I guess. And that's my application really, as I think about the gap in the game is I agree 100%. We, as a profession as a whole, I think, you know, obviously individually, I think it's different, you know, there's, we know leaders and our friends that maybe not thinking that way, but as a whole, if you just look at, you know, maybe say off online forums and you wouldn't think that, but if you go to those places, we are largely in the gap, unfortunately. And I think that needs to change.
He does bring up something in the book about kinesiology. And I tried to read this book. I just couldn't get through it. It's called Power Versus Force, where he talks about on a scale from 0 to 1,000, enlightenment like is 1,000, and that spreads through like millions of people. Fear you're made to be fearful. That's just how society wants you to be. When you turn on the news, when you, whatever you're pumping yourself full of, it's made to do that, right? And so people really only travel on the scale from 0 to 1,000. Fear, I think, is like in the 250 range. Happiness, enlightenment is like the 750 to 800 range as far as kinesiology is concerned about energy. And he says that people can only, most people only go up 3 points on that scale their entire life.
Wow.
So this brings it back to kind of that gratitude loop on just what we get to do every day in looking in people's eyes, taking care of your vision that we went to school to do. And you and I are, all of us are in industry meetings a lot of the times that they want to cut you out because we're not making decisions fast enough and being part of the conversation. You got to put yourself in those rooms. They value that. And we're the backbone of the industry. So he also talks too about burnout. Burnout to me is redefining the word on feeling valued, right? So on paying for services, paying for innovation, like you don't want to give a free eye exam. Why are you asking for somebody to give you something for free? That Yep. there's no value there. So when you ask for discounts or you ask for these things, you're actually devaluing yourself. And we like to do that in our industry a lot.
Yeah. Yep. I think we put our value, we place our value on too many external forces, right? As opposed to appreciating our own self-value. I think we've talked about this example on previous episodes, but, you know, Tuesday, you see a kid, you diagnose a brain tumor, you know, or maybe you diagnose a diabetes or something, right, for the first time that's going to have a significant positive life impact. On Thursday, a patient's upset about something in the optical and, right, writes you a one-star Recheck. Review. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Well, you get a one-star Yelp review, and Friday you're drinking, but you're probably not drinking to celebrate that you helped somebody and made a significant life-changing impact. You're drinking because you're miserable because some dimwat wrote a one-star Yelp review on a platform that's clearly a pay-to-play platform, right? And even though we know all these things, like we take that hit so painful as opposed to the value that we brought to everybody else, which is, I mean, it's human biology, right? We're designed to save ourselves and be protective and look for the danger. But I think that we also put a lot more emphasis on the negative than the positive because we can see the negative. It's tangible in front of us. That one-star Yelp review. We're writing the 3 cool things that have happened that day or my best moments list from John Acuff. I've got a whole notebook now full of all reasons why I'm kick ass. Right. And so that one-star Yelp review is not going to put me.
You are, Aaron.
I might take some feedback from it. Right. But it's, I actually named mine my brag book because I'm like, no, this is, I'm going to brag. I'm going to feel good about myself. Like I'm kick-ass person. Maybe not everybody agrees, but I don't care because I think I'm pretty kick-ass. And, you know, enough to where I can convince both of you to come on and join me and, you know, publicly admit that you're my friends. But,
well, I mean, that's why I start, it seems silly, I think, to my audiences when I do a billing and coding lecture and I always start off with, beliefs and identity and habits. Right. And I start off almost every lecture with the insight from Atomic Habits where, beliefs underlie your actions and your actions reinforce beliefs. And we constantly talk about actions. We constantly talk about the things that we need to do, but we very rarely ever understand like, hey, all these actions, all these things we're trying to do, they all rely on some underlying fundamental conviction that we hold about ourselves. And the reason I start that off is because you're not going to be able to choose a level four code or level 5, even when it is perfectly appropriate and you have documented, you're not going to choose that if you don't believe in your care. You're going to choose a 2 and 3 every time. It doesn't matter if you know exactly what the codes say. You know, it doesn't matter if you document appropriately. I know that's like makes you want to, you know, it's pretty cringeworthy to say that, but it's the truth. And so we have to start there with mindset, the convictions and beliefs we have about ourselves.
What do you think, where do you think we go wrong in this? Is it like kind of looking back to optometry school? I mean, I could have gone to medical school if I wanted to. I chose not to, right? Where do you guys think this comes from? Like, what undoing do we need to undo here and to heal? Because I think if we can, you know, help change one person's mindset and get kind of on this movement that we've all started, what is it?
Yeah,
I think it's a lack of evidence on how awesome we are. It's, I mean, so going through undergrad, we're competitive because we're pre-meds, right? And everybody was, you know, a pre-med some sort. We chose optometry for various reasons, and intelligence is not one of them why we chose optometry and not medical school. I think there's different things that attracted to us. I think historically the professions had a little bit of an identity crisis because we want to be seen as doctors. And at one point in time, we weren't able to, you know, write prescriptions and do things that doctors do. We don't have that anymore. I think school does a disservice by teaching us to be techs and doctors as opposed to just being doctors. Where we have to do everything. And then I think that we're not given an opportunity, like I said, to fail, and the restrictions are tight. Look, when you're treating high blood pressure, you know, lowering the blood pressure is a positive, right? We do refractions, and if you can't get them to 20/20, it's a fail, right? We were not taught that, hey, 20 good enough is 20 good enough, right? 20 happy is important. And so I think that we worry about, we let perfection get in the way of good, and then we just don't have a strong background or list of accomplishments that says this is how amazing I am, right? And we do that to ourselves. I don't think we were ever taught to build that brag book, which, by the way, the military is. They teach their people that when you take a course, when you complete a certification, right, you put it all together, so you have a giant resume of all the cool things you've done. You know, you put in your applications for awards because you did this, you nominate each other. We don't really have that, especially in private practice, because am I going to, you know, go brag to my staff and be like, hey, you guys need to tell me how amazing I am. Hey, it sounds horrible and awkward. And so we're so good about building them up that we neglect to build ourselves up. And after a while, if you're not getting built up, right, burnout is going to be there because you don't, all you see is your failures. All you feel is your failures. Right. And Kyle, to your point on the billing and coding, yeah, if you don't trust your care and you're afraid of the audit monster, right, I'm going to try not to be noticeable. And I think about going into a room full of refractive surgeons and says, hey, who's the best LASIK surgeon in the room? Whole damn room's going to stand up, right? Mm-hmm. Go into a room of optometrists and I say, hey, who's the best refractionist in the room? Not a single person's going to raise their hand. Right? Yeah, maybe I'm pretty good, but you know, Kyle might be a little bit better than me. It's silly. And I think that we need to let our ego shine a little bit, right? And I think we're doing better at it, but building that brag book, building that documenting our performance. In fact, one of my favorite things, and Kyle, I was telling you this ahead of time, was that they talk about Pearson's law, right? And it says when performance is measured, performance is improved. But even more importantly, when performance is measured and reported, the rate of improvement accelerates. Right? So it doesn't matter where you're at now, just start writing all the cool things, right? Here's where I am. Here's where I improved. And you're going to get better and get better. And then pretty soon, you know, you tell the auditors, hey, come at me, right? All these level fours and level fives are legit.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Probably don't want to tell them, come at me. That's probably a little bit too aggressive.
Yeah.
Probably, you know, but you can be confident that when they do come knocking,
yeah,
that
sure.
You're good. So sorry, for that was sure. A little bit of a soapbox, but
I love that. That was good. I also wonder too, like I would agree with every single one of those points, and I think you articulated them all really well. I've always wondered too, like just with the nature of the profession of it being, you know, I'm a firm believer that we are not like a subspecialty. We're not a subservient to anybody. We are an independent, licensed practitioner, but I wonder with the public's perception, if that self-selects, like if there's a almost like a selection bias in the personalities that choose optometry versus medical school or dentistry or something like that, that is more prone to that identity issue. And I don't have any evidence on that, but that's just that's an observation that I've thought about and seen in the past. But yeah, I think you're right on with those exact issues, but I think we just have to continue to doing things like we're doing, the three of us and a lot of our colleagues, and continue to preach this and continue to train well the colleagues that we can train and coach. And I think we can definitely turn the corner, because our you know, we know that our patients need it, right? And so the demand is there for sure. We just have to meet it.
Yeah, one of my yoga instructors that I love, she ends every class and she goes, "If nobody's told you today, you're amazing." So she uses the F-bomb at the end of yoga class every time.
Nice.
And I think realizing that too, like when you walk in the door, when you walk out the door, when you put your head on the pillow at night, that you are just that. And if you don't tell yourself that, nobody else is. But maybe like on this call, like we tell everybody how awesome they are. So,
and proof on how awesome we are. Do you know that for both of you and me included, people make appointments and block out time out of their life just to come talk to me and for my advice, right, on what to do? Right. If that doesn't say that I'm not worth something and you guys aren't worth something, right? People schedule their lives around coming to see us, right? I don't schedule going to the Mexican restaurant drive-through so I can pick up a carne asada burrito, right? But people schedule their lives to come see us. Probably should, but so we need to look at all the evidence that we have that we value. I mean, how many friends call us with questions that have nothing to do with their eyes but are very health-related questions? They don't see us as just an eye doctor. They see us as a medical professional. So I think part of that public perception is our projected view of public perception back at us. Right.
But I think being able to like kind of roll with the punches too, like when a patient does ask for a copy of their prescription, when a patient says, "Oh, I see an ophthalmologist for this," right? Is like not, we take that so to heart, like it's so cutting. And if if we live in the game, it is like, it's just like pull that knife out. And but that's why these things exist, like Dr. Contact Lens, was I couldn't hear that one more time. And when they say, "I want to go see an ophthalmologist," like know that you did the very best thing that you could do, and you just don't know where that's coming from. So arming yourself with those things, whether you're in, like this happened to me all the time when I worked at Costco. They're like, "Oh, I'm just here for my refraction." And then I would find something that somebody else missed. And just being ready for almost the comeback where you can protect yourself, I think is a critical piece to that too.
Yep. No, 100%. And it's interesting. I think we need to do a better job too of listening to the advice we give others. I was talking to my son, and he's got his photography business, and he's got tons of work, and you know, burning the candle late, and you know, it's awesome to see and hustle as a 20-year-old, and remembering that I used to do that, and glad I don't have to anymore. But telling him, "Hey, you need to start increasing your prices. You're worth a lot more than what you're charging right now," and seeing him question himself, you know, "I'm not good enough, and I looked at somebody else's pictures, and they're better, and their outcomes are better," and trying to prove to him that, you know, he is worth that much because look how much business he has. If you're that overwhelmed, raise some prices, right? Pay yourself what you're worth. And he looked back at me and he said, "How do you do that, Dad?" I said, "Oh, good, yeah."
Hey, I'm living in the gain over here. Okay?
Yeah, I am living in the gain. I took Chris and Kyle's course and now I know how to bill a level 4 properly. But I think the advice that we give out is certainly advice we need to listen to too. So I appreciated him flipping the script on me.
I love good. That.
Yeah. Out of the mouths of babes.
Yeah. And one book was funny. I was, I read to my little one, we're in the Magic Treehouse series. So this last one that we just finished, it talks about the 1889 Paris World Fair. And she takes you all the way through it. And she talks about Alexander Bell, inventor of the telephone. And then their magic that they're looking for was the lessons that they learned along the way. So like Thomas Edison was known for the quote, it's 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. Then you had Alexander Bell said, when one door opens or when one door closes, another one opens, but we like bask in the one that closed on us.
Yeah.
And then the Eiffel Tower, Mr. Eiffel that built the tower was just how hard it was and how everybody was so against him, but he had this vision and the tenacity that he went after. So the people that have failed and failed and failed and failed, you're seeing their successes, but you're never celebrating the failures. And they celebrated their failures along with the successes.
Yeah. It's good stuff. I think there's a lot of fun in I mean, we love the grotesque of the failure, right? That's why Dateline is such a good podcast. And, you know, nobody listens to like the successes and the Very Butterfly podcast, right? I want the grossness. I want the craziness and the drama. But I think you can build your own like excitement drama just on where you've been, right? And then find people that'll celebrate with you, right? Like you guys. I think that's important too, because it's hard to brag. And the first time you're going to brag to somebody else, you're not sure what that response is going to be. It's scary. So finding that close group friendship to say, hey, I kicked ass today. And knowing they're going to just celebrate back with you and not be jealous of your success, but be happy for you.
Or to justify, he talks about it too, to justify your wants. So we're taught to always justify our wants, not just want it. So like your needs, food, all that other stuff, like you need it, right? But your want, like, I want that bag because I just want the freaking bag, right? Not have to justify to somebody, but we're always externally justifying that want. You just want the bigger house because you want the bigger house.
Yeah.
Or whatever you want to put behind that is also interesting how it's like this scorecard.
Yeah. That's that intrinsic motivation. Like, how do you just, as long, you know, you gotta
shoes,
be your own
Aaron.
Jury.
You did circle
that. Oh, I love
that.
The shoes. I did circle that. Yeah, I circled that because my wife got mad that Adidas had dropped off another box. And I'm enjoying the whole like Samba, you know, kick again from when I was in high school.
Oh, nice.
And I saw they had some colors. And so I got some. And she said, you have a problem. And I said, absolutely do. But you know what? It makes me happy.
Right. I just want
it's a want
shoes.
Though, not a need. It's a want.
Oh,
not
it's
a
100%
need, right?
A want. It's
it.
Completely
but
ridiculous
not a need, right?
Dumb, but it makes me happy. And I put them on and my feet feel happy. I'm like, hey. Right. And my kids get mad because they think I'm stealing their style. So, you know, seeing their frustration with their dad try to, relive his teenage years is perfectly fine with me. I like it.
The OG.
Oh, too fun. Well, parting words on and kind of last thoughts on the book so we can let everyone get back to their day. So, Brianna, what do you want to leave us with?
Parting thoughts is just defining what success means to you. And when you kind of look back at that, like mine is just looking at the love, like all around and how that resonates both in my family life, both in practice life, and then for myself. And we always put typically ourselves last, especially as a mom, female kind of in the world. If you put yourself last, there's really nothing left. You have to flip that. You got to start with a full cup in the morning. So then everything else can come after that.
I like it. Kyle?
Yeah, I'm just going to read, that's for my parting thoughts here. Page 145, it says, the gap takes away your agency as a person and makes you psychologically rigid. The gain increases your agency and makes you increasingly psychologically flexible. Psychological flexibility means you manage your emotions, they don't manage you. So the parting thought is just really control what you can control. We have way more agency than we think we do. And really, it's just our perspective that is going to determine how much agency we do have.
I love that. And I'll just end with this entire journey, not just this book, but the previous one and the conversations we've had have really made me excited about learning and growing more. Right? Sometimes growing and facing what you don't know is challenging, but we talked about how the last book we read and talked and discussed, you know, it had actionable steps to change my life. This one is, I believe, has even more impact, and looking forward to just enjoying the journey and watching the growth personally and with all of you guys. So I appreciate it.
Yeah.
So cool. Thank you, everybody. And we will, we'll pick another book here soon and we'll do another one of these because they're fun.
Yeah.
It's fun. Awesome, Aaron. Thanks.
Take care. Thanks, everyone.